Welcome back to the Reverse Autoimmune Disease Summit. Oh my gosh, we are on version 5.0, everybody. So this particular version is healing the energy body. And of course, everything is energy. So there's just nothing that we cannot talk about when we're talking about healing the energy body. My guest today is Dr. Rob Downey, who witnessed his first exceptional clinical outcome in response to functional medicine in 2006. When his natural medicine mentor turned around a severe autoimmunity case via Whole Foods probiotics and safe, potent anti-inflammatory botanical supplements. When he asked her whether getting Institute for Functional Medicine training would allow him to speak the language so he could understand what she was doing, she responded, "If you get the IFM training, you'll help people the way I do," and he never looked back. That's where my certification is too. And it's such a good training. So I'm so glad that you listened to your intuition.
And did me too.
Yeah, it changes. I mean, when you think about how we were trained and then changing that paradigm completely to get into the story, the root causes, it's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it?
Thanks, Dr. Keisha. It's such a privilege to get to spend time with you today and to spend time with our participants. And it was utterly transformative. It was a watershed or sea change moment in my life. And the only things I'm probably equal grateful for are the people that love me, including my wife and friends, and the beautiful places in nature I get to be. The magnitude of it's just incredible.
So let's talk about autoimmune disease from a functional medicine perspective.
Great. What a great opportunity to discuss it with a master, which is both exhilarating and a little intimidating.
Yeah. We both have stories of reversing our disease processes, right?
Yeah.
And no two people are alike. And so it's, you're a master of this path too.
Well, that's really gracious of you. I would say that my thinking in this has evolved quite a bit over 16 years in functional medicine. And it's so neat getting to talk about this today, because this particular conversation goes all the way back to the case that did motivate me to get the functional medicine training. This person who I had conceptualized based on my conventional medicine training as having irreversible disease. Mm-hmm. So that very first case, the person was put into my schedule because I worked at an integrative clinic. I worked there because I was receptive to integrative medicine. I didn't have the training. And then here's this person in my schedule with deformities of the hands due to psoriatic arthritis and failing the third drug and getting recurrent pneumonia and looking at losing their job and getting circumstantially depressed and just so poignant. Mm-hmm. And looking at me with that look in the person's eyes, the look was, "You're the integrative person. You're gonna help me." Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that my response was to say, "I'm going to get you to the integrative person who will help you." So the person that became my mentor, a Bastyr trained naturopathic doctor and an absolutely radiant human being, 6 months later, this person had 50% resolution when I ran into the patient in the hallway. And so now when I think about it, I realize that there's this incredible plasticity in all of these systems of the body, including the immune system. And that's been the part for me that it's just such a great natural high being part of somebody getting back on track with getting along with their immune system and optimizing the function of the immune system, including the immune system no longer misrecognizing the self as the target. The one big change for me in the last year or two, I realized I was using combat or military language, this attack on the self. And no surprise, Jeff Bland, the father of functional medicine, always comes along and takes some idea and refines it in a way that's incredibly challenging to me and takes a long time to digest. And I saw him interviewed and he said, we always teach people that in autoimmunity, the immune system is attacking the self. But he said, I'd like us to think of this, that our immune system is doing its job.
Right.
And then ask ourselves what's next. And I suppose today's conversation may be most powerful if we look at the inadvertent problems we're creating in this military or war combative language, because then potentially we frame the problem in a way that's inherently got a fight flight energetic motif, which doesn't serve us as we try to get to harmony.
It's like the war on cancer, the war on drugs, the war on anything. Yeah. Yeah. Polarization, right?
Right. And
instead of miscommunication.
Well, I thought about how to frame this for our participants. And so I thought of these two phrases, and it doesn't bother me if people do or don't join me, but feel free if you want to. And so if I say this phrase, my immune system is attacking me, and we just stop a second and feel the energy of that statement. And then we contrast it to the statement, my immune system is doing its job. And we feel the energy of that. They have a different energy. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the deeper manifestations of that are that we start from a place of compassion for an overworked immune system living in a world it's not designed for, even compassion for ourselves living in a world we're not designed for. And I think then that compassion informs a different character to the answers. I suspect people move more quickly toward elegant solutions that are simple and harmonize with who they are, and they're less prone to ending up to wanting to go to medications right away, and less prone to mischaracterizing the immune system as the enemy. If we say our immune system's attacking us in a subtle way, it does sort of shame the immune system energetically. I don't think we want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, why don't we go through the biochemistry and the physical, you know, physiology of what we're talking about when we say mm-hmm. that the immune system is actually just doing its job.
Very good. So our immune system has these signatures it's looking for self versus other. Sort of black and white construct we can make of the immune system is it's teasing out what's it expecting to see. And it's worth noting also that parts of us change quickly, like our Kara Fitzgerald's doing all this brilliant work on methylation, which changes second to second, hour to hour, day to day. But our immune system changes over tens and hundreds of thousands of years. So when we think about the one I love is a conversation you and I got to have before. We talked about sugar, and then sugar gets stuck to other molecules in the body. The molecules get glycosylated. Well, now they look alien to the immune system because pre-agricultural people didn't have a bunch of molecules running around with sugars stuck to them. And on our toxic exposures. I suspect a lot of your audience is very sophisticated, and so they've got a lot of the puzzle pieces to pull together, that chronic environmental toxicity, the products that come into our bodies or get put onto our skin, the estrogen mimics, et cetera, the air, the water, our thoughts, and how those then affect genetic expression or gut barrier integrity. We end up with the cells and tissues being tagged or modulated or modified in ways, all of which are attracting the attention of the immune system. Those things don't look quite right. Mm-hmm. And the immune system's job is to say, I'm going to antibody tag this, in which case a lot of molecules end up running around the body, antibody tagged and clogging the liver. Or I'm going to engulf this in a white cell, or I'm going to release an inflammatory cascade to deal with this threat. So in rheumatoid arthritis, that happens in the hands. In asthma, it happens in the lungs. Eczema, it happens on the skin. Multiple sclerosis, it happens in the brain. But if we had the luxury to be the immune system or be an immune cell, we'd just be looking around and saying, huh, wow, there's a lot of work to do here. And so for me, it's helped me have what I think are better conversations with my patients and people that rely on me as somebody who can hopefully inform their journey to not only heal, but heal as quickly and efficiently as possible. Let's just be really compassionate toward the immune system and do the things that we need to do to turn over immune cells quicker via autophagy, so we get some bright, fresh new ones that don't have the old residues of misunderstanding. Let's do the lifestyle things that our immune systems are relying on to be resilient. Let's live with it, that this is immune system overwhelm, not so much. Let's let go of attacking the self, because it's a great way to understand autoimmunity, but I don't think it's a great way to heal it.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea that if somebody is doing their job and it's in the job description and you don't like what the outcome is, then it's probably important to go talk to that somebody. Have a collaborative conversation, right? Like,
right.
You know, right. And instead of just like if they're fired, right?
I'm glad you brought that up. My worry in choosing this way of priming the pump for today's conversation, I hoped very much it will be helpful. And at the same time, I worried that the concepts might be elusive in a way that was unhelpful. And so I thought of something like, if any of us who have been an effective supervisor, we go talk to the person about, mm-hmm. Are you aware of your job description? Are you aware of the details of your last job report? How are you doing? How's this feeling from your end? Mm-hmm. And then how can you be successful at this? Any of us who've done a supervisory role will often hear things like, oh, well, I just ended my marriage, or from the worker, the employee, my marriage just ended, my dog died, I injured my shoulder, I didn't understand my job description, I'm being bullied at work, I don't get along with my immediate supervisor. So that compassion, another way to frame it is, my favorite one actually is with adolescents. Here's two phrases we can contrast. One phrase is, my adolescent took the keys to the truck without my permission and bent the fender. And then the other phrase is, my adolescent is individuating and maturing. And they're the same thing.
Right.
But again, one of them recognizes that they're doing their job and the other sort of frames them as misbehaving. So this can feel like, well, wait a minute. Dr.
Well, Rob's, in the supervisory, like, one, you know, the one that I wanted to add to what you're talking about, like, because a lot of us have served as supervisors, you mentioned, is how can I best support you?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
For
right.
you to be able to do your job in the highest right. and best good for everyone right. involved. Right. How can I best right. support you? And I don't think the body gets asked that by us very often. Like, you have been really working hard for X number of years without yeah. a lot of gratitude or any bonuses. So I'm just noticing that, and I would like to repair that right now. You know, how can I best support you? Well, I mean, the energy Red Bull drinks that you have in the break room aren't really helping me at all. Is there a way that you yeah. could put something in there that's a little less, you know, toxic? Okay, sure. You know, right. we can put in warm, you know, lemon water and all kinds of yummy yeah. things for you. Oh, that'd be great. You know, and
yeah.
it's just like this really collaborative, compassionately curious way of communicating, which
yeah.
of course, if you take that into your family structures and your friendships and your work environments and, you know, your schools everywhere, it's going to work a lot better. And that includes with you and your systems.
I love it that I get to have the conversation with you, because I know enough about you that there was a presumption that this would resonate and I would get to learn something today, which is a wonderful benefit for me. The part I'd like our participants to think about is, this feels so subtle. Mm-hmm. This can feel like, you got to be kidding. It can feel like this is going to make
yeah.
a difference. But the reason I think it makes a difference is if we add to the conversation what Dr. Heidi Hanna calls the hustle and the grind. And so her big study on stress, the number one answer for why people are pinned by circumstance and they feel that they can't move forward is the hustle and the grind. And so if we say, well, what's our response to that? We got to rally. Well, if we got to rally, we got to get revved up. If we got to get revved up, we're more likely to have that cookie. We're more likely to have that second or third cup of coffee. We're more likely to then stay up late with Netflix to then wind
or
down.
Or not meditate or go out in the forest for a walk or sleep for at least 8 hours.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I think there's this subtle fight flight thing happening where we're very hard on ourselves. Again, we're sort of harsh supervisors of ourselves, or we're the coach that says, well, we're going to get injured today to get the win at the expense of long-term physical performance, whatever.
No metaphors. Pain, no gain.
Yeah. And so we're almost certainly then, if we say, okay, what if Eva Detko were here talking about our autonomic nervous system? Well, she would probably say, if we're in fight flight mode to solve our problems, we're actually not healing. That's the irony. As we rally, mm-hmm. we're in fight flight. What's that energy? Our system doesn't care at all on an energetic level about immunity, recovery, restoration, fertility, assimilation of nutrients when we're in subtle levels of fight flight mode to achieve our objectives. And I'm probably reflecting to some degree from some personal grief that I had to get over that I was doing this and I couldn't help my patients until I helped myself. And I'm really struck by when we become curious about what we need for restoration and for peace, then we start asking ourselves questions about, do we have permission to be at peace in the forest? Do we have permission to put our feet on the earth and be grounded? Do we have permission to put that lemon water in and sit with it for 30 minutes and just feel the blessing? And the folks I see recover from autoimmunity are in that peaceful, curious place. And the folks that I see have the greatest trouble appear to be in a state of recalcitrant anger. So I start having these connected the dots feelings that this is perhaps more important, or it's the kind of 301, 401 level work you're doing with your audience now that may be a very important time in their journey to be asking some of these questions.
And this is just to get a couple of details and really flesh this out a little bit with color. This is when you take a protocol and you have to do it perfectly. This is when you take a diet, call it a diet, mm-hmm. make it into a diet, and then set it up as a deprivation of I can't have. Right. These are the places where the healing does not occur in those spaces. Yeah.
Right. You had mentioned that sugar was enough of an issue for you in one of our prior conversations that you needed to take it with the seriousness that an alcoholic would take alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's to me such an interesting one to parse, because there is a way to engage that with curiosity, that if the sugar creeps in, we're compassionate and we get back on track. And there's a very rigid way to approach it with a sense of failure.
Right.
And I've experienced enough of both that I've gotten more attuned to which energetic space my patients are in mm-hmm. around things like that. And so I think
I'm off the wagon, so I may as well go down in flames now, right? Well, I had a little bit of this, so now I can have a whole sourdough bread loaf.
Well, perhaps it's empowering. I saw Dean Ornish say many years ago, somebody asked him what to do when their food plan isn't optimal. And he said, just start again.
Yep.
And then Mark David said that he doesn't know anyone that eats perfectly. And then I thought, well, Mark Hyman might eat perfectly. But then I thought about his ice cream and cookies in the summer, or his revelation that if if Ben and Jerry's Chunky Monkey was good for you, how much of it he would eat. And I thought of David Perlmutter saying, does grain brain mean you'll never have another slice of pizza? Some people might choose to go 90-10. And I realized a bunch of the luminaries are acknowledging that our bodies know the way, and yourself included. And so it seems to me we can think that there's these folks eating perfectly for their immune system and we just need to be like them. And the irony is that that might be one of the greatest traps of all, because we're going to do this concept called second arrow. We're not only going to suffer the immunodisruptive consequences of the sugar and the glycosylation, but we're going to put this second arrow into ourselves of guilt and shame, which is also immune inflammatory.
Right.
So the immediate compassion, and then even saying, well, why did I do this? What, you know, did I get a dopamine hit from the sugar? Okay. So what else can I do to get dopamine? Mm-hmm. Now or from now or tomorrow morning when I feel the same way. And this has been alien to me too, but I get to benefit from all these thought leaders. And so now I'm doing this. I'm saying, well, I got my dopamine hit from the gluten-free chocolate chip cookie today, but tomorrow it's going to come from sitting in the sun with my, you know, mushroom drink from Four Sigmatic. And it's really cool to me feeling that gentle evolution. It feels right. And I feel great in response to it. And there's a sustainability to compassion-based practices mm-hmm. based in understanding why we do things. It feels far more sustainable than any shoulds I've ever repeatedly applied to the Teflon of my misunderstandings.
I call this the detox retox roller coaster. You know, you can actually stop buying tickets and don't get on the roller coaster any longer, but that will come at a time when the evolution is right for you. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is everyone's different. And, you know, how long it took me to get off that roller coaster is not going to be the same as what it takes another person. And so, you know, it's just really having a lot of grace around this, a lot of patience, a lot of willingness. And that's what I think is one of the most important words in all of it, to develop self-awareness and observe, like, mm-hmm. what, track your own self, right? Mm-hmm. What just happened right there? What was I feeling? How old do I feel when I feel that? mm-hmm. You know, and then, oh, is this something that I learned to link when I was very young to bring me peace? And mm-hmm. maybe that kind of grounding that this brought me then isn't helpful today, and I can think of a different way to do it, you know. And so that's just basic problem solving instead of shaming and getting into an emotional spiral around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything you just shared there makes me flash on mindfulness and mm-hmm. this fork in the road, as it were, where as these things arise, if we've been doing our mindfulness practices, whatever they are for us, then we can kind of see these things arise illuminated by how we're feeling in the moment and not push them away or attach to them. But some of this stuff is so emotionally painful. Its genesis is often, and I wish I had the attribution here, but I heard the most pithy phrase the other day, our childhood wounds are the mothers and fathers of our fate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're realizing now, based on your work and others' work, that we'll run into these habitual things that we did. So many of us don't realize it's an action in itself to just look at it in the light of consciousness, just to stop and be aware. And so good news for our participants is you don't have to then go run 3 miles or go prepare a gluten-free bread or something. If you just stop and be aware of what you're experiencing and be curious, that in itself is beneficially immunomodulatory. I think that might be some of the best news of all.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk about the connection between the gut, the brain, and spirit? We're talking a lot about consciousness, which gets left out of the conversation a lot. And I think we've brought it into the spotlight as an important one to talk about?
Love to do that. I think they rise and fall together. And I love the physiology of that. I think all of us in functional medicine are enamored of physiology. So I think about the peace in the brain, which comes from parasympathetic rest and digest, rest and restore nervous system tone, then running the software to the gut so that we assimilate nutrients and we have good gut barrier integrity, thus little or no leaky gut. And then that positions our gut to help our brain stay healthy and happy as the gut barrier rises and falls. So rises and falls the blood-brain barrier. So we're doing a favor to our brain barrier integrity by helping our gut barrier. And I think that the spirit, on a spiritual level, we're wired for safety, again, borrowing from Heidi Hanna. I feel like all of these conversations could be subtitled Another Day of Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. So when she says we're wired for safety, our spirit needs to feel safe to do its most brilliant dynamic things that it does for us about where's the opportunity, where's the service, what's my highest self, what can I let go of, how can I grow? Even our spirit letting the universe in to do those amazing Jungian synchronicity type things it does when we're in a state of service and peace and gratitude and abundance. And then I love it that any of these three pieces of the triangle all can undercut one another. So they can be vicious circles or vicious cycles, but they can all support one another. So sometimes my gut restoration and repair patients, the gut supplements will reboot the brain, which reboots the spirit. And others will have a spiritual breakthrough, which reboots the brain, which reboots the gut. Mm-hmm. So I love it that people can, from my perspective, they can take any point of entry and good things will happen.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking a lot about finding peace in this journey. And we live in an era that I think it can be universally defined as not very peaceful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how do we encourage people to be able to stay peaceful when outside circumstances are not?
Well, it's something I think about a lot. I presume I'm going to be thinking about it, reflecting on it a lot for the rest of my life. I'm not sure there is a more important question in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I've seen huge benefits to my patients and the people that are on the learning journey with me if we ask more and deeper questions about that. The biggies for me lately are that the news, like what's happening in the world, is important for us as citizens, but I think we get way too big a dose. And then I think those of us that are intuitive or empathic can tolerate an even smaller dose. And I'm very concerned that I've never heard a single, I think this might've even been part of our last conversation, so I have to apologize if I'm being redundant, but I've never heard the news anchorman say or anchorwoman say, today this many kids were nice to their dog. Today this many people took a walk. Today this many people took a meal to their neighbor who was recovering from surgery or just got out of the hospital. So yeah. I'm super concerned now that the world is much better than the news. Mm-hmm. And luminaries like David Perlmutter in Brainwash are saying this, that in many ways we live in a much better world than we ever have lived in. I also think about, I was part of homeschooling for a while and I read world history to my kids. Humans have done brutal, weird things to one another for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's the dark side of
this is what I point out to my children. I go through generation by generation. And my dad did the same thing for me when I was crying when I was pregnant with my first child. And there's another drive-by shooting in Dallas, Texas, where I live. And he said, Keisha, you know, what was happening when I was born in 1945, you know, and I gave him a little historical snippet of the horrors. And then he said, what about my mom, you know, in the 1930s? Yeah. And you know, again, another world war. And, you know, and he just kept going backwards. And he said, this is the way of humans and on this planet. And so who you're bringing into this world right now, the onus is on you to help them become, you know, a vessel of service to be of aid to this world. And I just thought, oh my gosh, what a beautiful way of putting everything into context and perspective.
Yeah.
And not just getting, you know, kind of, it went kind of like, I have a meditation I do that's from mouse to eagle. It was like I was taken from being the mouse and running around and seeing only the horrors that were right there, you know, to being the eagle that had like this larger freedom and perspective and could dive into whichever current, right? By choice. And it, you know, I think that's so important for us to remember. We're not mice.
I don't know of anything more important, because it's an existential challenge for so many of us now to say, I must reconcile myself to this for there to be a path forward. Because I think the magnitude of the information is inherently goes right past flight into freeze faint.
Right.
I mean, it's so profoundly distressing. We feel frozen or we feel dissociated.
Yeah.
So to me, the most important part of being peaceful is realizing that there's this sort of holographic or cognitive distortion type issue of what's actually happening in the world is sort of beyond our comprehension. And by electing to focus on the parts that we sort of heart, intuit, matter most, and that we're true stakeholders in, that would be what a dear friend of mine calls strategic withdrawal, which is we strategically position ourselves for our heart and our mind and our existence to be a light to others by humbly acknowledging that it's just too much to drench ourselves in horror.
Yeah. I had to ask my husband to stop relaying the news to me. I said, I don't watch it for a reason. And I don't look at it on my phone first thing in the morning the way you do. You know, so we would take our hikes in the morning. He would be full of the news of the world. And I would say, I don't want, like, I didn't get on my phone this morning for this reason. So I don't need it to be conveyed to me. Thank you. You know, I did. Yeah. I just keep myself really, I don't watch any media that is horrifying. I don't, you know, and people might say, well, that's very Pollyanna. But I actually find out what I need to find out, you know, it just happens. And so, you know, and then it keeps my energy system really clean.
That to me is I can comment from just having made a 97% reduction in my news consumption since the last time you and I talked. I'm sleeping again. So there's a one-to-one correlation there. And Natasha Falahi, the sensitive doctor, taught me that if we're empathic or intuitive, then which many healers are, then the folks that are relying on us for that healing energy, we may not have the bandwidth for some of that other stuff. And I don't ever want to feel like I'm undercutting my citizenship or my degree to be informed, but the abundance of the information relative to our need for the information appears to me to be about 10,000 fold to one. I mean,
right.
We got a skewed ratio here. So I'm not struggling anymore with whether or not I'm a good citizen. I'm still picking up plenty of the major storylines. And I also think about which things I need information on because it's part of my job. So I just did the last Institute for Functional Medicine update on COVID, and I track that through CDC, Centers for Disease Control, and New York Times perspectives I find to be a helpful companion to that for me. There's many good sources, of course, but so I think there's a balance here, but I'm just so pleased to be getting the dose right. I also had a person I think is brilliant tell me to just not be so hard on myself and feel like I have to solve these problems, but instead to just put my feet on Mother Earth and give them to Mother Earth and get a recharge. And I'm going to explore that a lot more
Yeah.
When I can't sleep, now I'm going to push the dose. I'm going to do it more often, and I'm going to see how many these things I can give to Mother Earth. So
yeah,
there's a mystical part of me that.
In Peru, they call that hucha. Mm. And in the Andes, where I was trained by a teacher, you literally take your hands on the top of your knees, your legs, you know, and put your feet hip width apart, and you lean over, and you just think about like all of the dark thoughts and feelings that are congesting for you and feel really heavy and stuck energy. And you kind of do the lion pose in yoga, you know, and just, and you lean over and you just like you're vomiting it onto the earth. Yeah. And the idea is that Pachamama then takes all of that and makes it into fertilizer and grows beautiful vegetables and fruits and flowers and, you know, and that she really can take all of that. You know, she's the stabilizing force underneath us. And if we're disconnected from her, we forget, you know, that we can ground that way. We can release this. We don't have to be the container, that she can actually transform it and make it into something beautiful that feeds lots of other beings, you know? And it's just like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so beautiful. And I'd like to say that historically I trusted that, but given how revelatory it was for somebody really prescient and wise to tell me that I needed to do that and just go ahead and do it. It was humbling and also just incredibly reassuring. And it feels to me like, okay, another watershed moment. This is letting go of beating up on myself that I have to be able to carry this and going ahead and saying, it's okay to let this go. And then the same person said, and then Mother Earth can go ahead and give you a recharge every time you get to, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's science even tells us about that charge that we get, you know, and it really does impact us. And this teacher that, you know, was teaching me this practice said, there's arrogance in believing that you have to hold everything. And I went, oh, well, that's an interesting step further, right? Into thinking that somehow I'm just that important that I have to hold it, you know?
So much sense to me. That makes so much sense to me. And it's so humbling. And none of us, I don't think, I'll only speak for myself. I don't like to run into my own arrogance, but some of the most important growth steps I've ever taken in terms of being a healthier human being, a happier human being, have had to do with hubris and arrogance.
Yeah.
It creeps in somewhere. Probably as a protective mechanism for the underlying fear and anxiety. And so I was just suffering so much and not sleeping so much due to this existential overwhelm that I just felt, I remember saying after hearing from Marissa Rignola, yeah, go ahead, give it to the earth. Okay, great. I'm out of here. I'm going to go do that right now.
Yeah.
And then again tomorrow and again the next day. And she encouraged me to go ahead and do it at lunch, even just to let go of the mornings, you know, realizing that a bunch of the folks I take care of, just their energy is really a struggle for them, their energetic imbalances. And then I think empaths and intuitives and healers sort of are, to some degree, we're tuning in, we have to tune into that radio station to be of service. So then there's a consequence if we feel beholden to carry that out of maybe a kind of self-flagellation or something.
Yeah.
We can instead give it to earth, the earth, we can serve better.
Right.
So it
clears us out.
Yeah.
Because ultimately it isn't us doing the healing. We are not the healers. We are not the ones, you know, we're just channeling information to another person, right? We're just the vehicle, the telephone, the communication vessel. You know, it isn't us. And so that's the thing that when he said that, it clicked in. I went, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. I can see that. I can track arrogance there. You know, this isn't even about me. And so, you know, it's like, yeah, okay. It's just like going and dumping out the trash. All right.
Right. Well, and that, that lack of ego, so that then these healing experiences, I find that they happen more and more often, the less I identify them with me and realize I get to be a participant in this experience, not a source.
Yeah.
I would say now it feels like there, as far as I can tell, there isn't any perception at all that I'm the source. I feel a sense of transparency around there's some sort of greatest good that wants to happen that's co-potentiated by a person who wants to be the facilitator and a person who wants to be the recipient.
Yeah.
Feels a little bit like Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it that sometimes we're the recipient, sometimes we're the facilitator. That feels like part of the beauty of life too.
Well, and in all of it, we're mirroring each other and what mm-hmm. we need to learn. So, you know, if we're willing to see it that way. So, yeah. Well, it has been such a pleasure to spend this time with you. Thank you so much for sharing even a fraction of your wisdom with us.
Thanks for all the light you bring, Dr. Keisha. I love getting to be in it.
You too. So you have a free gift. You ran a really beautiful summit called the Healing Habits Summit and have an ebook, I think, that you put together or a guide of healing habits.
Yeah. So that will be available and it's 15 pages and it's healing habits from a functional medicine physician. And it's deliberately provocative and quirky and fun and has
like
different
you.
Things each page.
Which is so great. So great.
So I think people will dig it. And a lady who's really gifted and does a lot of this work is the one who made it beautiful. So I gave her the ideas and she made it absolutely gorgeous. Lindsay Griffin, who is based out of New York. And so I feel attribution is another part of grace and graciousness and gracefulness. And so she took something I felt really good about and made it great. And I hope people really benefit from it and enjoy it.
Thank you. All right, everybody. We've got Dr. Downey's contact information here and that really beautiful download that you can take advantage of and really learn what he's up to and the work that the beautiful work that he's doing in the world. Until next time, be well.